What's up, Wisconsin? I am Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. You can listen to my show on your local Civic Media affiliate, but always on the app. We're going to be on Spotify, I think, in about a day. My Facebook site will be up. I'll be twitting or tweeting or whatever that stuff is with some help from my friends, including my man, Evan. Thanks for being with me again today, my friend.
Always, always. Wouldn't miss it.
Well, I wouldn't be here without you. So we're a pair, aren't we? So I wanted to start today. I know Dom and Krute were talking about the fundraising blast email that was sent out by the state GOP. And I want to talk about that a little bit, but from a slightly different angle. And that is, what is going on with news in this country? And I don't claim to be a journalist. I'm a lawyer who shares some thoughts on things with folks that are kind enough to tune in. But we all know what's been happening in newsrooms and with newspapers. And that is that so many of them have been shutting down. News isn't equally available. And when I say news, I don't mean Fox News, the commentariat, or MSNBC. I don't even mean what I do specifically. What I mean is folks that have gone to journalism schools and understand the ethics that apply to journalists, who understand how sources work and how you need multiple sources, particularly with really breaking news, that have editorial teams and fact checkers, that kind of news. Because this is now a pattern. The Los Angeles Times just last week announced that it would reduce its newsroom staff by 13%. Just a month after it celebrated winning not one but two Pulitzer Prizes. Last month, Vice, a company that I think a lot of us thought was kind of the future of news, filed bankruptcy protection. BuzzFeed, also a Pulitzer Prize winner, they've shuttered. Insider slashed its staff by 10% earlier this year, and its journalists are on strike. Hundreds of journalists from Gannett, which was sort of on par with USA Today in terms of news conglomerates, also had a short strike last week after years of budget and staffing reductions. And we've seen similarly major cuts at WAPO, New York Times, even the Wall Street Journal, but also places like MTV News closed its doors. It was a news outlet that appealed for folks in my generation, born in the late 70s. There was news reported on MTV News, and it reached young people. Very few people I know still get their news in a hard copy newspaper. I want to know what you, Civic Media folks, where do you get your news in addition to this place? Because we do commentary here. We'll read news, but we give you commentary. That's different from journalists that are giving you information. It's certainly different than investigative local journalism, the kind that exposed the Catholic Church from the Boston Globe years ago. The kind that hold local governmental officials accountable. And as you've heard me say many times, that your local government is the thing that impacts your quality of life in the greatest way. So Civic Media folks, where do you get your news from? Are you still getting a hard copy newspaper? If so, which? Just on Sundays or every day? 844-967-2789. I'll tell you where I get my news, right? I have online subscriptions to the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, the Chicago Trib, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. It's a lot of news I'm reading, but I do it all online, which means I have to take it upon myself to search out some of the more conservative commentary. That's one of the reasons that I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. Because we create echo chambers. if we're curating our own news bubbles, like, right? We only hear the things that we want to. That's why I applaud some of our conservative listeners, even when they just want to stir the pot with us. I applaud that. You're listening to different information. So not only have we curated these news bubbles, but for the average person, I think good quality journalism is becoming more and more expensive and out of reach. Most of those big papers, right, you pay now. Otherwise, you get what, like 3, 6, 10 articles free. But eventually, you pay. If I'm poor folk, I'm not shelling out part of my like paycheck to paycheck money to pay for the New York Times, even if I found it to be really interesting and engaging. And this is really what is concerning to me. It used to be, and this goes back to the sort of early 1800s, that the concept of the penny paper came about. Newspapers didn't used to be a penny back in the 1830s and 1840s. They were about 6 to 7 cents, which was generally too expensive for most people. So what a couple of business people figured out was, hey, people will buy this if it's interesting and engaging and if it's cheap enough. But news isn't cheap anymore. Even if you do just mainline Fox News all day or MSNBC, if that's your deal, you got to have cable for that. And the time to watch it. So to me, it was really weird to hear about the GOP sending this fundraising email complaining about civic media, right? Because radio remains one of the freely accessible outlets for both news and then the attending commentary. And this is so important in this moment. This isn't about canceling or anything like that. I saw this weird talk today advertised, oh, let's talk about cancel culture. Is it reasonable accountability? Or is it stifling dissent? It's like, do we need to get past this? Especially if you're on the left. The idea should be that there are some places where almost any speech is okay. Now, we've all understood that there are limits to speech. Most of us are familiar with the Supreme Court jurisprudence going back many, many years that you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And we need to think about what those modern analogies are. But news should be very deeply reported. It should be reported from all sides of the political spectrum. And I don't mean that the journalist has a political bend. I mean that they're reporting news about the left and the right and criticizing and holding accountable and testing the facts as those that stand to gain from our engagement, put them forward. So when the GOP sends out an email and says, give us money because now civic media exists, that concerns me because they're targeting one of the last remaining free outlets for news and political commentary, and that is the radio. Why is the premise that only the right has a right to the radio waves? Aren't you trying to cancel us? Me? You? But what they're really trying to do is say that not every viewpoint should be equally available to people. That you shouldn't be able to turn on your radio dial and hear a left or a centrist perspective. There's something like 81 radio stations across this state that basically have conservative commentary. So civic media has a few now, and that's a problem? And then you don't allow us to attend your convention so we can talk about it? I mean, this is very bizarre to me. What it's, again, when you think about what Sinclair Media has done and some of these other large media conglomerates, and Sinclair Media, if you're not familiar, I suggest a Google. But they're a national media conglomerate that's basically bought up all kinds of local TV and radio and newspapers, but really a big focus on local TV stations. And they frankly give copy that's rooted in Republican talking points to all of their local TV anchors. There's some really interesting montages where folks are cut together from single-player outlets saying the same talking points. And then those that actually do journalism and fact check show that what they're saying isn't true. It's a framework on facts, but it's a framework that clearly shows favoritism towards the right. And that's on the local TV news. So I still don't understand how the GOP can be alleging that somehow civic media is silencing political discussion or news. Yeah, you change formats in radio stations. That happens all the time. That's like any day that ends in Y. There's nothing new there. So this is silencing? I don't get that. It's disturbing to me. What they're objecting to is the continued efforts to ensure that information is available equally to folks of all income levels. If you are on the line, hang on. If you want to join us, 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is The Maggie Dawn Show.
Publish these same fake stories without checking facts first. Some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 This is extremely dangerous.
She's taken almost all that I've got. But if you want, I'll try to love again. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know.
The first cut is the deepest. Baby,
especially when it's Sinclair Media having a bunch of local newscasters say the same thing over and over and over again, which is slanted copy. I mean, that's what you heard Evan playing on the out and the in here. We all have an obligation, right, to try to investigate and interrogate the facts, deal with the facts that challenge our preconceived notions. And journalism is an essential part of that. It shouldn't dictate what we believe, but it's the fourth estate. It informs the public. Otherwise, all we're going to do is read press releases, right? That's it. Just read the presser. Whatever the elected official, whatever the CEO wants you to think, just read that. That'll be good enough. Civic media stands for something different. It's not conservative. I'm a centrist who leans a little left, a passionate pragmatist, if you will. And I think it's important to hear from people who think differently or add to the radio broadcast wave something other than the same right-leaning commentary. But I want to hear from you, 844-967-2789. Andrew in Waukesha, what do you have to say about this?
Well, a few things, and thanks for taking my call. I will say this, first of all, you know, as a someone who's followed politics my whole life and as a conservative, you know, I've always been graded at the fact that liberals tend to have their way with the national media, And, you know, talk radio was like the only place to get a balanced conservative opinion outside of the New York Times and the Journal Sentinel. But here's why. I just thought I'd give you some perspective, because I know why they're afraid of you. Because Robin Voss can't run to Civic Media like he can run to the Journal Sentinel and get a puff piece. Rebecca Clayfish can't get an article written about how she's just fighting for women's rights from Civic Media. So, you know, I would think that you are doing good work, but if you want to put your money where your mouth is, why don't you actually engage with the conservatives and Republicans who are also not happy with the Wisconsin GOP?
Oh, happy to have them. Flat out open invitation anytime to any politico from the right that wants to come on and talk to me about real issues. I totally agree, Andrew. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let me ask you a question, Andrew. You said that you believe that the national media is predominantly liberal. What do you say to the ascendancy of Fox News and a number OAN and a number of these other outlets over time? Don't you think that there are news media corporations that view news as the profit-making product, and they'll sell it any way that they can, whether that's on the left or the right? Don't you think that's kind of the era of news that we're in? I mean, that's why I referenced Sinclair.
Well, I can tell you know, so I listened to RFK Jr. speak about his relationship with not Rupert Murdoch. I can't remember the Roger Ailes. Apparently they had a friendship, and Roger would allow him to come on to Fox News and talk about environmental issues. And he gave a little insight in terms of how these companies, and Fox News in particular, makes money with, you know, pharmaceutical ads. Yes, you see, I think, even on the right now, a general, you know, distaste for corporate news. And, you know, that's healthy. I applaud that. I want to see more.
So when you say, you know, so, and I just ask a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Andrew. When you say from the right, a distaste for corporate news, do you mean news that is predominantly put out there to make profit? Is that what you mean by the right moving away from corporate news?
Correct. Yeah.
Roger Ailes was not really in the business of trying to generate an enormous amount of wealth for Rupert Murdoch? I mean, wasn't that Ailes' whole bend on this, that he said there's an untapped market? Let's create the product on the national TV news media that the right wants. Wasn't it indeed profit motive above all else?
Well, that is the point that I'm making. I mean, the anecdote that Robert Kennedy made was that, you know, Roger had said to him, you know, if any of my anchors, you know, talked about autism and vaccines in the same sentence, he'd be like, I'd have to fire them. Like, I would have to economically. So it had nothing to do. It had very little to do with politics. And, you know, again, I'm a pretty young man. I never turned to Fox News for my source of truth. And I always found it funny when Fox News was held up as this, you know, juggernaut of right wing opinion. And it's like, that's not where I get my news. So I'm glad.
Why do you think that is?
Getting back.
Why do you think so many people gravitate to Fox just because they're the only one out, or were the only, they used to be the only one out there on TV?
It's the same reason why Nike and Adidas are well-known brands. It's just top of mind.
Interesting. Well, thanks so much. Go ahead.
A conservative newspaper. That's the thing, though. And I do believe we need to get back to a more literate, more articulate. I mean, one of the websites I loved to go to was The American Thinker.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, and here, do you agree with me when I say that I think journalists in general in the United States, as compared to journalists in other countries, don't ask really good follow-up questions? Like, forget which way your network leans, right? Like, if you've got Senator Jones in the hot seat, like, why aren't you asking the follow-up question when they put forward some of the puffery that politicians just do because that's the nature of their business? Do you agree with me that there's a lack of good, intelligent follow-up questions, of testing and making politicians really get into the meat and potatoes of the argument that they're trying to make?
Well, that's right, because it's all about access. That's why I brought up Voss and Clayfish, because the reporters live and die based on their sources. So it's way too comfy in America. We need to hold their feet to the fire.
Couldn't agree with you more, Andrew. My new listener from Waukesha and a conservative to boot, tune in. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. If you're on the line, I will get to you next. Thanks for listening. Lock it in. Maggie Dawn, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. You can download the app from your favorite app stores. Starting tomorrow, it'll be available on Spotify. Facebook will be up. We'll be twitting and tweeting and all those things. So check me out on the socials. That should be fun. Would love to continue the discussions that we're having here on the show on social media. And again, I just want to say, if you happen to be somebody who's right of center or far right and you want to chop it up here on the air, I welcome you. I love it when people call and we try to actually get underneath some of these issues and have real conversations. Because I think, again, like I said during my first week of radio, I think there are values and ideas and principles that we can actually find agreement about and then just argue about the how. And that's the interesting part. I love it when we're arguing about the how and not the why, right? That's where policy is made. That's what government should be about. My friend Jim from Appleton, we've been talking about media, why the GOP is so spooked by civic media. I don't really get it. We're just one voice in a sea of so many. Jim from Appleton, what say you this afternoon?
Hi, Maggie Dawn. I am greatly enjoying your show and the provocative questions that you ask. I wanted to touch on the cancel culture thing just a little bit, because everybody seems to forget when the right wing screams cancel culture. Do you remember the Dixie Chicks?
Of course. Now the Chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, they canceled them pretty good.
As far as I know, that was the first example of organized cancel culture. And who led off with that? It was the Republicans.
Yep.
It's been a stone in my craw for a long time. Is they scream about if they're spewing it, they're doing it.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim, for the call. Thanks for listening. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I missed you, Jim.
That's just what comes out of the right wing.
Yep. Thanks much, Jim. Always good to hear from you. Listen, I think both sides have been guilty of cancel culture, guilty of trying to cancel out what someone else is saying. But it's my viewpoint that on balance, the left is generally more willing to engage in really tough discussions if they're grounded in some semblance of fact. And if the debate is not littered with things that divide and really otherize people, that try to hold down groups of folks that are trying to self-determine and live as they are, as who they want to be, with dignity and respect from all sides. That's where I think some of the left tends to react very strongly. We could do a whole show, and maybe I will do this. You can always email me, maggie.dawn@civicmedia.us, with your show ideas on what goes on in higher education. I don't agree with that. If there's one place that we should be encouraging young people to deal with difficult concepts, it's in higher education, right? And that has to be undergirded by a media and a news press that provides good and meaningful coverage, not just the commentariat that's way on each end of the spectrum. My friend Rico from Rock County, you're up. Rico, you there? Oh.
Yeah, am I there?
There you go.
Am I on?
You are, Rico. What say you?
Hey, this whole email put out, fundraising email, by the way, folks. From the RNC, and it's like, I heard you earlier talk about, hey, the audacity of these people to say that civic media is silencing anybody, They're obviously not listening to the show, because I could have swore just last night I heard CJ on your show.
Sure did.
And yeah. So they're obviously not listening, are they?
I think it's one of those things where, and thanks so much for the call, Rico. I think there's a level of disingenuity about it. And listen, fundraising emails are meant to stoke fears so that people crack open their checkbooks. And oh, by the way, some estimates I read today was Trump has fundraised over $12 million in the last week or so since the indictment became very certain to occur. And the estimates are he's going to rake in $2 million off of the Bedminster talk, rally, what have you, with pillow guy Mike Lindell this afternoon. So, you know, this is what you do in partisan politics, but I just think we were a really weird antagonist for them. Like, why even legitimize us by complaining about us? It'd be much better to just ignore it, right? Vicky from Burlington, you're up on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hi, Maggie Dawn. Wow. I have been a fan. I'm a Patreon subscriber to the Dub. And I've been tweeting you for a couple days now. I cannot tell you how wonderful, smart, intelligent, progressive, and also reasonable you are. You are such a role model for me. Thank you. Thank you, Devils. Maggie Dawn, you are killing it. We needed this so much. We needed this so much, woman. We did. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, Jeannie, and thank you, Devil.
Thanks so much, Vicky. That's just so nice to hear. You know, we talk into the ephemera here. Oftentimes you're in a studio, maybe with just your producer, and you hope it's connecting and maybe even provoking a little bit. When I argue with folks on the line, maybe even with CJ every once in a while, it's because I want to get into it. I want us to have the ability where you're screaming at your radio and I might be saying the thing that you're screaming at your radio about. That's fun. And I think it's possible to return some fun to public policy debates. Geez, wouldn't that be nice? That we can, again, join issue about the how, but we begin with some of those values that connect us. One of the values that I think most folks want is good information. They want good and well-reported news. They want commentary that isn't unhinged, right? It may feel good at the time, but it's kind of like, you know, eating at the OCB at the Old Country Buffet. You're like, ooh, that plate of mashed potatoes was certainly delicious, but I feel a little guilty now. I think most people, we want a steady diet of reasonable commentary and of good information that helps us hold government and big business accountable. Thanks so much for listening, Vicky. My man, Mark from the Sacks, you've been listening from day one. Got to hear from you today, Mark. What say you?
Yeah, and thank you, and thank you to Andrew for calling in. It sounds like more reasonable conservative than CJ, who you challenged him yesterday to actually talk to the facts, to answer your question. I don't think he ever really did. I mean, he brought up Benghazi and the Biden crime family and yada, 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 that knowing a little bit more about Benghazi than I wish I did, that that Christopher Stevens went there to Benghazi on his own and decided to go there himself. And that's unfortunately what happened there. Did some of these conservatives are calling about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Have they bothered to go out and read the surrender agreement that Mike Pompeo, engaged in with the Taliban? Right. Likely they haven't. My reading of news, I can remember going back all the way back to 1974 in 11th grade, social studies class, had a subscription to Newsweek, and we were discussing back then, I remember the Pinochet overthrow of the Allende government there in South America, where, why are we supporting, a dictator like Pinochet when we're, America, small L, small D, liberal democracy in this country.
Right. Thanks so much, Mark. I really appreciate it. He's hitting on a really important, I think, historical reference point, and that is the critical role that journalists played throughout the 60s and 70s in bringing to light the campaigns that the United States engaged in to prop up basically dictators throughout Central and South America, because we did that to basically prevent the Soviet Union from expanding its communist footprint and its communist influence over countries that we thought weren't particularly stable. And this involved basically genocide in certain countries. And it was journalists that brought this to light. We need good, solid information. And what I find very interesting, and I'll challenge all of you to maybe tomorrow or the next day, tell me your favorite lawyer come journalist, because there's a lot of them out there. If you read the bylines in the Times, LA Times, WAPO, the Wall Street Journal, you will see a lot of former lawyers that move into journalism. And I think there's an element of investigating a case or an issue and then presenting those facts that has an analogy in both fields. But I'm going to move to those lawyers that we were beginning to talk about yesterday, because behind every corrupt CEO, behind every corrupt politician, you'll find a lawyer making excuses for them and making an argument. And it's there that I find my greatest level of discomfort. Because lawyers, unlike journalists, when they make arguments in courtrooms, they have sworn an oath to the Constitution, which is a form of an oath to each one of us, that they will not make arguments they know to be false or lacking in legal basis, that they will put country above the individualized interests of their client. And here is what has bothered me so deeply for so long, is that Donald Trump isn't getting indicted today if Roy Cohn didn't exist. If he didn't have a lawyer who eventually was disbarred, and now there is a long list of lawyers who have been sanctioned by their bars or disbarred entirely, he doesn't become president without lawyers excusing his racism, his violation of the Federal Housing Act. It is only when you have lawyers to help frame, cajole, gloss over, spin, that bad folks can get away with very bad things. And one of Donald Trump's A number one co-conspirators is a guy by the name, a lawyer, hopefully not for too long, by the name of John Eastman. And John Eastman, now this week, his disbarment proceedings have begun in California. And why is this so important, that John Eastman eventually loses his law license? It's because John Eastman made an argument and convinced a client, Donald Trump, that he could, by hook and crook, stay in power in the United States, even though he lost the general election and lost the popular vote. He did this by effectively arguing that GOP legislatures could put forward an alternate slate of electors. And he did this based on a precedent that occurred during John F. Kennedy's presidential campaign. The last state to count votes in JFK's election was Hawaii. There was a recount there because there were some, the numbers didn't add up. And so while they waited for Hawaii, there was an alternate slate of electors. Well, that is not what was going on in the 2020 election. The votes had been counted. We knew who the valid electors were. Now, when I come back, I'm going to read a little bit about what's going on in John Eastman's disbarment proceeding, because I think this is an exemplar of how dangerous lawyers can be when they are willing to sell their soul, the Constitution, and me and you down the river to pursue the dollar. Because trust me, if Donald J. Trump didn't have millions of dollars, he wouldn't have lots of lawyers lined up to make any gosh darn argument that they can possibly invent, be it meritorious or not, if he couldn't pay them. Which, by the way, he doesn't really like to do anyways. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. You can join us for the last segment and tell me about the lawyer that you hate the most. Hope it's not me. When we come back after these quick messages, you're listening to...
Like a wave, gonna find some sleep someday. Dirty speakers screaming a face, and the teachers keeping some secrets safe. That's why we read between the pages.
That's why you read between the pages with me, Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. You are listening to Civic Media. Join the conversation. Join the debate. Tell me why I'm wrong. 844-967-2789. The caller last segment that told me she's been tweeting at me. I'm sorry I haven't been answering. I will fix that and get on the stick. We've been talking a little bit about how lawyers are the enablers of bad guys who do bad things, especially when you talk about like corporate and political wrongdoing. Every person who commits a crime in this country deserves a vigorous defense. So does Donald Trump. But when the crimes that we're talking about are being committed against the American people, it's much different, right? Because the wrong isn't particularized against one person. There's no victim standing in court today. Right? There was no one there representing us. No matter what you think, if you think Hillary Clinton should have been charged, I'll say, okay, she should have. So do you not charge anybody else for the entirety of history because she wasn't charged? Assume she committed a crime against the United States, so we don't charge that of anyone else if they do that. We can criticize, we can compare, but there's no victim in that courtroom. The victim is every single one of us. That's who Donald Trump victimized when he concealed and kept and lied about and then lied about it some more and then got someone who works for him to do his dirty work for him, who's now standing next to him as a co-defendant. And the only reason that man thought that just because he wanted a party favor from the presidency, no matter what risk it put all of us and our entire national security apparatus at, no matter what risk it caused, he only thought that because for his entire life, he's been able to buy and sell lawyers to defend him. And when it came to the presidency, he found a lawyer who would invent legal fiction to try to install Donald Trump as president. Eastman spent the final weeks of the Trump administration stoking false claims of election fraud in order to put pressure on GOP-led state legislatures to appoint alternative slates of presidential electors. In Eastman's view, those alternate slates would form the basis of a dispute that only Pence could resolve. On January 6th, no less, when he presided over the joint session of Congress to count electoral votes and finalize the results, no state legislatures agreed to do this. Instead, in five states, including Wisconsin, groups of pro-Trump activists signed false documents claiming to be legitimate presidential electors. Here, Bob Spendell, a guy who sits on the Wisconsin Election Commission, was one of those false electors who knowingly signed a false statement. Eastman would ultimately change tack, arguing that the false electors presented enough of a controversy for Pence to decide which ones to count. Wow. Jacob, Vice President Pence's general counsel, fiercely rejected that strategy, which they contended would require violating several provisions of long-standing election law with no credible evidence or basis in law to support reversing the outcome of the election. But Eastman, undeterred, fought with Jacob even as rioters, infuriated by Pence's refusal to acquiesce to Trump's pressure, ransacked the Capitol. Wow. Wow. Guess what? Today, little news bit. Two of the false electors from Arizona were seen entering the federal courthouse where Jack Smith continues to convene a grand jury to investigate Donald Trump's effort to overthrow the United States government on January 6th. And his co-conspirator extraordinaire, his enabler lawyer, was none other than John Eastman. Let us hope that the California bar does its work and sees that this menace to society, this menace to law and order here in the United States, is disbarred. Now, what became extraordinary about Eastman's work leading up to January 6th was that a federal judge determined that Eastman and Trump likely conspired to obstruct congressional proceedings and defraud the public. And that ruling gave the Select Committee in Congress access to thousands of Eastman's emails, including some, and did that based on the crime fraud exception. Does this sound familiar? This is why the crime fraud exemption exists, because rich people use their lawyers to get away with more crimes. We don't have a ton of time left, but Jerry, it's good to see you on the line. Oh, I think we lost Jerry. Sorry about that. Listen, this is the fundamental problem. Just because a lawyer makes the argument, just because a talking head on the news makes the argument, doesn't make it true. Just because I say it doesn't make it true. What we're doing here is trying to explore the facts to understand what happened. And so for those that say, but, Clinton, 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 or but, Biden, 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 they find the evidence to charge them, let's charge them. Even if we assume that they should have been charged and weren't, does this mean that this man who committed a crime against every American citizen should not be held accountable? That doesn't track for me. And finally, one of his own darn lawyers is trying to speak the truth on this. And Bill Barr has effectively said what I have just said, which was that we need to complete an investigation into Biden. Now, I think the investigation has been completed. Barr doesn't really agree. But he says complete the investigation of Biden. And he says there should have been additional pursuit of what Hillary Clinton's actions were. He criticizes them. And so he should have more credibility here. But here's what he did say. The government acted responsibly. They acted with restraint. Donald Trump lied and obstructed the subpoena, and they did the search and found more documents. The president's daily brief provided by the intelligence community is not Donald Trump's personal document, period. Donald Trump's crimes in this indictment are crimes against each and every one of us. Let's not forget that. Today is not a day of joy. It's a day of seriousness and seriousness of purpose. Come back tomorrow for more. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show, and you are listening to Civic Media.